Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is February 19, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about crypto exchange Binance suspends trading over systems messaging error. Samsung continues support for crypto with new flagship smartphone. Coinbase becomes first pure crypto firm approved as Visa principal member. UK crypto exchange Coinfloor launches no BS service for Bitcoin beginners. Korean ICO project shuts down, says negative perceptions of crypto made business impossible. Bitcoin bulls back in the driving seat as price crosses $10,000. Bitcoin coders confront an old quandary, how to upgrade an entire network. Crypto industry lauds token safe harbor, but warns of risks. Now let's get started. Crypto exchange Binance suspends trading over systems messaging error. Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange by trading volume, suspended trading on Wednesday, alerting users of an outage due to temporary system maintenance. The exchange has suspended deposits, withdrawals, spot trading, margin trading, person-to-person trading, lending, redemption and asset transfers from subaccounts, margin accounts, futures accounts and wallets that hold government-issued or fiat currencies, according to a notice posted on the company's website. Futures trading is unaffected, the exchange said. Josh Goodbody, Binance's London-based Director for Growth and International Business, told CoinDesk in a series of WhatsApp messages there was an issue with an engine that pushed data around the system. It was a simple systems messaging error that we wanted to fix straight away, Goodbody said. Main effect was balances were slow to update. It's definitely untrue that the exchange had suffered an internal hack, he said, referring to some posts on social media. Binance CEO Changpeng CZ Zhao tweeted at 13:38 Coordinated Universal Time there was probably another 45 to 90 minutes to go before trading resumes, while noting that was a very rough estimate, don't know how accurate it is. Just before publishing time, another tweet said systems were about to be restored in minutes. In a separate post, Zhao said the exchange would waive everyone's margin interests for today. Least we could do, he wrote. We'll also run some big campaigns after we deploy the performance fixes. Samsung continues support for crypto with new flagship smartphone. Samsung Electronics' newly launched Galaxy smartphone will come with the same crypto storage facilities found on previous models. Unveiling the Samsung Galaxy S20 range recently, the Korean tech giant said the phone's security system includes a new secure processor dedicated to protecting your PIN, password, pattern and blockchain private key. Although Samsung gave much more website real estate to the S20's improved battery life and picture capturing capabilities, the reference to private keys suggests Samsung's new model will continue to have the same cryptocurrency storage facilities found in previous models. Cryptocurrency private key storage will be available as standard across the entire S20 range. Samsung first added support for cryptocurrencies in March 2018, when it integrated a wallet device into its then-top model, the Galaxy S10. In July, the company introduced a developer kit that allowed third parties to create specially designed dApps for the phone. One such dApp allowed users to pay for goods and services in stored cryptocurrencies by scanning a merchant's QR code. At the time of launch, the wallet was only compatible with Ether and ER20 tokens, but Samsung added support for Bitcoin in September and included Tron later that year in October. Although initially exclusive to the S10 range, the company said in May that it wanted to lower barriers and add cryptocurrency support for some of its more budget models. The S20 range is expected to go on sale on March 6. Coinbase becomes first pure crypto firm approved as Visa Principal Member. Coinbase, the San Francisco-based cryptocurrency exchange, has been made a Visa Principal Member. Announcing the news on its blog Wednesday, the firm said the news marks it as the first pure-play crypto company to be approved by the credit card giant. Coinbase has been working with Visa since 2019 when it launched its Coinbase card in the UK. The debit card allows users to spend cryptocurrency as cash anywhere Visa is accepted. The card has since been made available in 29 markets with 10 cryptocurrencies supported. Principal members of Visa are financial institutions authorized to issue some types of payment cards. In theory, Coinbase could issue cards to other crypto companies, though it's not clear if it plans to use that power immediately. Discussing the Visa approval, Coinbase said that membership will enable us to offer more features for Coinbase card customers, from additional services to support in more markets, all elements that will help to evolve and enrich the cryptocurrency payment experience. According to Forbes, the status was granted to Coinbase in December but has just been announced. UK crypto exchange Coinfloor launches no BS service for Bitcoin beginners. UK-based crypto exchange Coinfloor, which made news last year by delisting Ethereum to focus solely on Bitcoin, is launching a simplified buying service. Going live next month, Coinfloor, the longest-running crypto exchange in the UK, is providing an auto-buy service aimed at Bitcoin, BTC, newbies and hodlers alike, as opposed to sophisticated trading types. It's all part of Coinfloor's no BS approach to crypto, said CEO Obi Nwosu, who wants to educate new users as well as offer full transparency in the form of monthly proof of custody audits of all the coins held on the platform. There are maybe 5% of people who are either trading professionals or who like to speculate. For them, high volatility trading is fine. But we want to make the exchange for the other 95% who don't want their currency to be volatile. Our idea is to try and make buying bitcoins boring, said Nwosu. Coinfloor's auto-buy uses dollar-cost averaging so that users who might be queasy about bitcoin volatility can buy small amounts on a regular basis over the long term. These purchases, once set up, are done via bank transfer using the UK's faster payments system. Nwosu said it comes down to advising people to start with amounts as little as $10-13 per week, buying Bitcoin regularly in the background at an amount that's very comfortable for them. If you are going to do it, you are going to want to do it with an asset that has the longest track record of growth and the highest likelihood of growth in the future, and that's Bitcoin, said Nwosu. Coinfloor is proud of its Bitcoin audit service, which the exchange has been releasing every month for some 6 years now. It consists of a time-stamped and transparent list of all the balances being held for pseudonymous customers. A number of large crypto exchanges agreed to provide crypto solvency audits following the notorious collapse of the Mt. Gox exchange, but none of them kept to it, Nwosu said. Pointing to this week's F-Coin debacle, Nwosu asked why exchanges are not providing proof of custody. It was insolvent. Maybe for over a year. Bitcoin audits would have solved this, he said. Korean ICO project shuts down, says negative perceptions of crypto made business impossible. An $8 million ICO project is shutting down, citing regulatory uncertainty and difficulties in onboarding new users. Content sharing platform Contents Protocol announced Wednesday that following numerous attempts to turn its business into a success, the firm is closing down and refunding investors as much as $7.50 million worth of the Ether, ETH, raised in its initial coin offering, ICO. We inform you that due to continued regulatory uncertainties in cryptocurrency and lack of business prospects, we have decided to end our project, reads an announcement that has replaced Contents Protocol's website. Contents Protocol was a relative latecomer to the ICO boom, only completing its crowd sale in December 2018. It was created as a subsidiary of Wecha Play, a popular Korean streaming service, and was designed to incentivize content sharing by effectively rewarding users who rated and reviewed films and TV featured on the platform with its native CPT token. The main thing that the blockchain allows us to do is compensate a new participant, users, who really provide free marketing for the content, said John Kim, Contents Protocol's global business developer, in an interview with Ran Neuner for CNBC, back in May 2018. The project aimed to become profitable by processing and analyzing sharing data, which could subsequently be sold back to content providers to inform them on which movies and TV series should be featured on their platforms. But in Wednesday's announcement, Contents Protocol complained that few consumers wanted to use the platform because of the negative perception toward cryptocurrency, price volatility and complex user experience. The company said anti-crypto attitudes were unlikely to improve in the short term, and would impact how digital assets would be regulated in the future. Without a strong user base, it also made it difficult to encourage other content providers to provide data for the platform, limiting any possible insights that could be subsequently sold back to platforms. Contents Protocol raised $29,333 ETH, $8.1 million, in its private and public ICOs in 2018. All remaining assets, worth approximately $7.5 million, have now been converted back into Ether and will be distributed to investors who have requested refunds. CPT token holders will also be able to exchange them at a rate of one token for $0.002 worth of Ether. All CPT collected will be destroyed when the company enters the liquidation process, the company said. According to Contents Protocol's asset records, around 3,800 ETH was exchanged into $1.45 million to fund business operations. Although some of the funds were converted into Bitcoin, BTC, the vast majority of assets remained in Ether throughout the company's lifetime. A company spokesperson did not respond to requests for comment by press time. Bitcoin bulls back in the driving seat as price crosses $10,000. View: Bitcoin jumped above back $10,000 on Tuesday, reinstating the bullish trend and opening the doors for further gains toward $10,500. The bull case would strengthen with a descending channel breakout on the 4-hour chart. A strong rejection at the channel hurdle could yield a retest of the former resistance turn support at $9,825. Bitcoin, BTC, returned into the five-figure zone on Wednesday, reviving the bullish case and putting recent highs near $10,500 back on the radar. At press time, Bitcoin is trading at $10,139, representing a 4.48% gain on a 24-hour basis, as per CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. However, the top cryptocurrency by market value was looking weak 24 hours ago, having breached the 2020 rising trendline support at $9,700. The subsequent sell-off, however, ran into bids near $9,600, following which prices charted a near 90-degree rise to $10,290 during the U.S. trading session. Tuesday's spike marked an end of the pullback from recent highs near $10,500 and validated the positive shift in the long-term sentiment highlighted by the golden crossover, the bull cross of the 50- and 200-day averages. As a result, bigger gains could be in the offing in the short term, more so as the price of gold, a classic safe haven asset, is again rising. The yellow metal jumped 1.32% on Tuesday, its biggest single-day gain since January 3 on haven demand amid losses in the U.S. stock markets. Investors shunned risk after Apple warned it does not expect to meet its March quarter revenue guidance due to the coronavirus outbreak's effect on suppliers in China. Bitcoin has increasingly moved in tandem with gold so far this year. Its one-month correlation with gold strengthened to 0.70 in January from December's minus 0.12, according to cryptocurrency exchange Kraken's January volatility report. Gold is currently trading above $1,600 per ounce and appears on track to test the six-year high of $1,611 reached on January 8. Bitcoin jumped 5% on Tuesday, keeping the 2020 rising trendline support intact and confirming another bullish higher low at $9,467, February 17 low, a sign of continuation of the rally from January lows near $6,850. Additionally, prices closed well above $10,050, the high of Sunday's doji candle, confirming a bullish breakout from a period of indecisive price action. With the bulls back in the driver's seat, a retest of the recent high of $10,500 looks likely. Bitcoin is still trading in an expanding descending channel on the 4-hour chart. A breakout looks likely as the relative strength index has already violated the descending trend line and is pointing north. If the cryptocurrency again finds acceptance under $10,000, prices may revisit the former hurdle turn support of $9,825 marked by arrow on the hourly chart above left. A violation there would shift the focus to the neckline support of the potential head and shoulders pattern on the 4-hour line chart. At press time, the key support is located at $9,584. A break lower could discourage buyers, leading to a deeper slide toward $9,000. Bitcoin coders confront an old quandary: how to upgrade an entire network. An old debate is resurfacing in the Bitcoin developer community, underscoring one of the critical challenges facing decentralized systems: how to update the software when ostensibly no one's in charge. The catalyst this time is called Taproot Schnorr, a years-in-the-making privacy and scaling upgrade that's seen exciting progress recently, especially now that the code in the form of a pull request is being reviewed and tested, bringing a change first discussed years ago closer to reality. The code change itself isn't controversial among developers so far. What is up for discussion is the best way to activate the change, making it finally possible to send Bitcoin (BTC) transactions in this new way. At the heart of why there's a question about this at all is that Bitcoin has no leader and is distributed across the globe. How does the whole network smoothly upgrade in a way that's backward compatible, allowing those with older versions of the software to continue participating? What's the best way for Bitcoin to make this type of change without disruption? To be clear, Bitcoin's code is updated almost every day by the open source project's global web of developers. But consensus code changes, which strike at a deeper part of Bitcoin, require a soft fork, which in turn requires a certain amount of coordination to go through smoothly. There are a series of soft fork designs which have recently been making good progress towards implementation and future adoption. However, for various reasons, activation methods have gotten limited discussion. Bitcoin Core contributor Matt Corallo wrote in an email to the Bitcoin developers list last month that reopened the debate. There are two main options for enacting a soft fork. One option, Bitcoin Improvement Proposal, BIP 9, has been used for a few soft forks in the past. It ensures the miners are prepared in advance of a soft fork to make sure a change smoothly ripples throughout the network. A common objection to this approach is that it gives miners too much power. Alternatively, there's BIP 8, also known as the User Activated Soft Fork (UASF), which activates regardless of whether miners signal they are ready or not. Depending on execution, this approach could cause other problems, Corallo cautioned. History lesson. The discussion started in 2017, when BIP 9 was used to activate Segregated Witness, or SegWit, a change integral to Bitcoin's great scaling debate. To protect miners from mining invalid blocks and losing money, SegWit would not activate until 95% of miners raised a flag showing they were ready. The majority of mining pools, groups of miners who combine their computational power on the network, declared they would not back SegWit, essentially vetoing it unless it was paired with an increase in the block size parameter. Bitcoin's mysterious creator had set the ceiling at 1 megabyte, limiting the number of transactions that could be stuffed into blocks, which are published every 10 minutes or so. This was a controversial demand that many believed could lead to the centralization of the network and couldn't be executed successfully unless Bitcoin were centralized, anyway. Long story short, the incident showed mining pools could use the 95% threshold to extract other changes instead of the intended purpose, to help them ease into the change so they wouldn't lose money. Many Bitcoiners did not like this, seeing it as miners trying to use their power to push through a change not all users wanted. As this debate raged on, a mysterious developer going by the handle Shaolin Fry pointed out that Bitcoiners could still make the upgrade. The root of the idea is that Bitcoin users and exchanges should decide whether a change should go through, and miners would follow their desires, not the other way around. This method had been used to activate other Bitcoin changes. Shaolin Fee formalized this idea in BIP 8, otherwise known as a UASF. A large swath of users loudly declared support for the SegWit UASF on social media and began running the software. This seemed to have the desired effect. Before the day the UASF would activate, miners started flagging support for SegWit. Notably, there were a couple of flavors of UASF circulating during this tumultuous time, one more cautious and more conservatively timed and less controversial than the other. But without getting into the weeds, the takeaway for some Bitcoin developers was that UASF was a better way to enact changes. At the time, Rusty Russell, a developer at Bitcoin startup Blockstream, went as far as to apologize for playing a part in constructing BIP 9. I hadn't expected that this checkpoint would be used as a choke point to ransom the network. This significantly changes the risk model. BIP 8 is now a far superior method for network upgrades, where miners can only accelerate the process, not block it, he wrote in a Medium post. Long memories. Remembering all this drama, some developers are wary about using BIP 9 again for Schnorr, Taproot, or other future changes. I think BIP 9 is a proven failure, said Bitcoin Core developer Luke Dashcher, responding to Corallo, going on to provide technical reasons for his objection. During the scaling debate, Dashcher was one of the most vociferous proponents of a UASF to push SegWit through. Alex Bosworth, a developer at startup Lightning Labs, expressed a similar opinion, based partly on recent drama surrounding Bitcoin Cash (BCH), a smaller cryptocurrency that split off from Bitcoin in 2017. A sizable group of Bitcoin Cash mining pools recently proposed that some BCH from each new block should go to a development fund, which Bosworth sees as another example of mining pools flexing their muscles in a way that's bad for cryptocurrency decentralization. I know that common thinking for soft fork deployment is to attempt the traditional friendly miner method. But a good, one-third, of our current hash rate has just organized into a cartel for the purposes of censorship to steal coin subsidy, tweeted Bosworth, who works on infrastructure for the speedy and scalable Lightning Network. That's why he supports a UASF method, though one with a longer time horizon. A slow-burn UASF feels most appropriate to me, he added. Synthesis. But some, urging caution, worry that looking to UASFs as the sole activation method could open the possibility of pushing through changes that could hurt Bitcoin. For example, one reason developers initially liked BIP 9 is the 95% threshold could provide a sort of safety net. If a problem came to light while mining pools were working to upgrade their software, then pools could stop the change. It's tougher to stop a UASF activation once initiated. That's why Corallo re-proposed an old idea, something of a mixture of BIP 8 and BIP 9. The soft fork would start with BIP 9. Then, if it failed over the course of a year due to unreasonable objections, users could debate and regroup over a period of 6 months. After that, if the change is definitely something the community wants, they can try BIP 8 over the period of another year. Some developers might argue this time period is too long for a change with no unreasonable objections. But Corallo urged patience. Finding out whether the objections really are unreasonable could take some time. In the case that it does fail, BIP 9 process, in fact, provides a good learning opportunity as to the level of community readiness and desire for a given change, he said. Developing Bitcoin is not a race. If we have to, waiting 42 months ensures we're not setting a negative precedent that we'll come to regret as Bitcoin continues to grow, he said. Readers can read Corallo's full reasoning as well as many of the nuanced responses from developers here. And while Russell seemed quite against BIP9 in 2017, he told CoinDesk he now agrees with this hybrid approach. Since the miners' attempt to block changes didn't work, and we didn't suffer greatly from the delay, I don't mind BIP9 activation, he said. But he proposed a shorter timeline than Corallo. Perhaps the one-year BIP9 timeout is too long, and a six-month expiry would be preferable. That way, users can organize a UASF if the BIP9 activation fails and they feel it is due to miner obstructionism, Russell said. Engineers are painstakingly reviewing the proposed Taproot Schnorr code to fix any lingering problems. So there's still time for developers to discuss activation options. But the community will need to decide on something before the change can be added to Bitcoin, building more privacy into the network. Crypto industry lauds token safe harbor, but warns of risks. The takeaway: SEC Commissioner Hester Pierce wants to give token projects 3 years to adequately decentralize their networks before worrying about securities laws. Industry participants believe some kind of so-called safe harbor is necessary, and praise Pierce's proposal for providing a reasonable plan for creating one. Questions remain, including how to define network maturity and what happens to tokens deemed immature under Pierce's definition. While Pierce's proposal will not need an act of Congress to take effect, it will require other SEC commissioners to sign on, and it is unclear whether this proposal can become reality. The dream of compliant, token-based fundraising in the U.S. received a lifeline from Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC) Commissioner Hester Pierce earlier this month. And though industry observers are generally supportive of the plan, they're quick to highlight its potential flaws. Pierce's safe harbor proposal would give crypto entrepreneurs a 3-year grace period to launch and decentralize their projects before having to address whether their circulating tokens qualify as securities under federal law. The proposal would have the added benefit of allowing a greater pool of investors to participate in a token sale, she said. My hope is I think the same hope that a lot of people in the space have, which is it gives people an opportunity to participate in the economy and society who have before now not been able to participate as fully as they'd like to, Pierce told CoinDesk in a phone call. I think it gives the opportunity to people to make decisions for themselves. The proposal has been met with mixed reactions, with some praising the potential for more companies to create genuinely decentralized networks and others concerned it may allow scams to propagate unchecked for years under the guise of good faith. Others raised questions about the mechanics of defining network decentralization after the 3-year period. Under the proposed rule, dubbed Rule 195, developers would have to disclose their identities, holdings in the token they are working on, any founders' rewards and a host of other information. They would have 3 years from the date of the first token sale to decentralize their networks, which Pierce defined as the point where no single entity could reasonably modify the network's functionality. The proposed rule would only apply to new projects issuing tokens for the first time, and not to any existing projects or networks. CoinDesk spoke to half a dozen industry lawyers and experts to examine the potential implications of the safe harbor proposal. Many agree that a safe harbor is needed, though the specifics of Pierce's proposal drew a wide range of responses. Peter Van Valkenburg, director of research at industry think tank Coin Center, told CoinDesk the proposal seemed both sober and reasonable, though he noted it does remain only a proposal at the moment. For this to become official policy, it would have to be bought into from the other commissioners and SEC Chairman Jay Clayton, so we'd have to wait for that, he said in a phone call. Still, CoinList co-founder and president Andy Bromberg said he believed it was unlikely Pierce would have introduced the rule if she thought it had no chance of moving through the commission. Path forward. Startups, attorneys and advocates in the space praised Pierce's proposal, saying it gave new tokens an opportunity to build liquidity and give networks the time to mature without getting caught up in securities laws. Bromberg told CoinDesk that the proposal's advocacy for putting tokens on exchanges was important. We actually want these to be traded on exchanges, he said. She was making a statement that a lot of people think were coming from a securities law perspective, but it's important for tokens to be trading. Furthermore, the proposal creates some clarity around the idea of what a decentralized network might look like, potentially codifying a definition SEC Director of Corporation Finance William Hinman first suggested nearly 2 years ago. The proposal is trying to put some bright lines around the idea of network maturity, which needs a safe harbor, said Gabriel Shapiro, an attorney with Zero Law. Projects meeting Pierce's proposed definition essentially knock out one of the prongs of the Howey test, the U.S. Supreme Court case usually used as a reference point to determine whether an instrument is a security meant to generate future returns for holders, said Amy Devine Kim, Chief Policy Officer at the Chamber of Digital Commerce. What I really liked in this rule is the way they've defined network maturity, which is decentralization or a functional network, she said. As you know, we've focused on the Hinman speech, which would be decentralization only, and that focuses on one type of business model and may not be appropriate as the market matures. The disclosure regime in the proposal is similar to one existing public companies already abide by as well, Van Valkenburg said. He cited Apple as an example, noting that its investors and the general public trust the technology firm to accurately report earnings, shareholder meetings, and disclose the financial or business history of its members. And while the proposal will still need buy-in from the other SEC commissioners, the Blockchain Association's Kristen Smith noted that Pierce's suggestions fit within existing securities law, meaning it would not need a congressional amendment to take effect. Not foolproof. The proposal, as it stands, still leaves some questions unanswered, industry lawyers said. Grant Gulovson, of Gulovson Law, told CoinDesk in an email that formal disclosures are a step in the right direction, but many of the required disclosures already appeared in ICO white papers in 2017. With just some minor tweaks, I fear that under the terms of the current proposal, U.S. investors would be subjected to the exact same series of abuses and losses suffered by the rest of the world during the last ICO run, he said. He proposed requiring projects to lay out a business plan mapping out their road to profitability and preventing exchanges from gaming the system to their own benefit. If cryptocurrency exchanges were subject to the same regulatory oversight as traditional exchanges, this would not be an issue, he said. But because they're not, my fear is that they will see this safe harbor proposal as a means of further enriching themselves at the expense of U.S. token sale participants and the projects that list their tokens with these exchanges. Shapiro, who shared a written response to Pierce's proposal last week, told CoinDesk that one aspect he struggles with is the idea that projects are essentially unregulated for 3 years, apart from regulations around fraud. He said this part of the proposal may even be seen as a technology-specific rewrite of existing securities laws, as the token sale and subsequent transactions could still be securities transactions, they just would not be regulated as such. Yankin Guo, an attorney with her own practice, echoed Shapiro's concerns, asking how a 3-year exemption can be justified. Whether the tokens are still essentially securities at the end of the 3-year period is another issue. Pierce submitted a definition of what a decentralized network would look like, but it remains unclear what might happen to any networks which do not meet this definition. Now you've had a bunch of things out there trading as non-securities, and now they're suddenly securities, Shapiro said. We shouldn't rewrite the securities laws. I don't think the government should be creating incentives for companies to raise money in a certain way via regulatory arbitrage. Shapiro recommended lowering compliance costs by reforming securities laws as an alternative solution for crypto projects, noting that the high expense of filing documents and otherwise abiding by the law is one holdup for companies. For example, Blockstack reported paying $2 million when filing to conduct a Regulation A+ token sale last year. This sort of reform should be addressed across the board, rather than just in one particular area, he said, a view Guo agreed with. Defining what good faith and reasonable effort on the part of the initial development team is another area that needs clarity, Guo told CoinDesk, saying there must be checks and balances on these projects during the 3-year period rather than no regulatory requirements. Building liquidity. Crypto exchanges may also fall under tighter scrutiny under Pierce's proposal, as part of Rule 195 touts the importance of secondary markets for these new tokens. At the least, these secondary markets would be responsible for potentially creating liquidity around new tokens. The problem with token sales in general is that there is a disconnect between whether an underlying project can be profitable and the value of its token on secondary exchanges, Gulovson said. Catherine Coley, CEO of Binance, US, told CoinDesk that the exchange has its own risk assessment framework that evaluates whether a cryptocurrency has a use case and the team's viability. The exchange, a U.S. affiliate of Binance, currently lists Bitcoin, Ether, XRP, Qtum, Atom, Dash and 20 other cryptocurrencies. If adopted, the proposal might help exchanges become more comfortable with listing new assets, Coley said, with the understanding that the developers behind those projects would be required to maintain quality development and would not immediately be classified as securities. That gives more comfort to the hunger and appetite to the new coin being listed, she said. Whether a new token remains a security at the end of the 3-year grace period is a risk the marketplace is taking, she said. This risk does emphasize the importance of exchanges in the U.S. independently ensuring their comfort with tokens they list, she said. It's not peer pressure, we really look through things from our own lens because at the end of the day it's our risk to manage, Coley said. On the other hand, the proposal would allow exchanges to help new projects gain momentum as they get started, she said, and having a token be blessed would give marketplaces some comfort in the vetting process. Gulovson said adding a regulatory oversight component for exchanges may also help ensure the new secondary markets are not being gamed should also help investors be more comfortable. One question the proposal does not address in its definition of network maturity is whether mining centralization factors in. A network could have a decentralized group of developers under the proposal but still have a small group of miners or nodes or stakeholders. Kim said the network might still qualify as mature so long as it is functional, while Pierce said mining centralization is a problem, but not necessarily one that falls under securities law. Next steps. To take effect, a majority of the SEC's commissioners would have to vote in favor of implementing the safe harbor proposal. Pierce told CoinDesk that while her fellows are aware of her views on tokens and token projects, she has not yet gone to them directly with the proposal. Rather, she hopes to gather public feedback and support first. Individuals can email her office or file a comment through FinHub, the SEC's financial technology branch. The next step is to get people to rip it apart and tell me what I did right, or tell me what I got wrong, she said. As much as I can get people interacting with each other as they think about it and then try to take that back to my colleagues and say I think there's real interest and that's a way to get something on the agenda, send a positive message to the industry. There may be a time crunch, however. Coin Center's Van Valkenburg noted that Pierce's term expires this year, and SEC Commissioner Robert Jackson returned to private life last week. Both Pierce and Clayton can both continue serving in their current roles for another 18 months, assuming successors aren't nominated, and it is possible that they will be re-nominated by Congress to continue serving. Van Valkenburg said it is entirely possible the SEC will look different in a year. Pierce declined to comment on whether she expected to be renominated for another term, though she did say I certainly don't feel done with what I want to do at the SEC. I really don't feel done, there's lots of work still to be done. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.